Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back to WPR Rebuttal. My name is Senator JPO. I'm your host. Our call number is 929-477-3965. And I'm finally getting back to the topic of UW-SAGLA liberal arts essays. And I'm on number 3 of 6. So without wasting any time, Avery Wehrs, W-E-H-R-S is her last name, but she was a runner-up, but because UW System mentioned her in a press release, then I tracked down her essay, and I reviewed it, took some notes offline, and now I'm just going to point out some things that maybe warrant some further critical thinking, if not outright discussion, depending who calls in. Well, by the way, number again is 929-477-3965. So if Avery wants to call in and talk about her essay, she happens to be listening, then that's definitely something we could do. But really, in trying to contact the people who are mentioned in the press release and let them know, hey, I'm going to review and critique your essay, and you can call in this conference line, and we can have like a live discussion about it. It was tough to find some of these people. Like, UW La Crosse closed the email account of their students within a month after I graduated. So by the time I put together this podcast idea, it's like, oh, shucks. You know, some of the people, there was no way to really contact them. And Avery was one of the people who I was unfortunately unable to contact directly, although perhaps through word of mouth, someone might have told her. But I even tried the Twitter handle, but it doesn't appear that she's really on Twitter by an obvious handle that would be matched to her name. So, okay, so what was the title of her essay? It was The Measure of an Education. And, again, Avery is this UW La Crosse political science student, and she doesn't say what year. And I didn't really see a LinkedIn profile, so I believe the fact that she's not talking about or graduation or anything like that. I'm pretty sure, La Crosse is a four-year campus, so she's probably between a sophomore or junior, maybe going on her senior year, but I doubt she's a freshman because really with some of the things that's been going on, I mean, by now she's definitely at least a sophomore. So just to give some perspective here is that, you know, I mean, Avery's writing from a fairly inexperienced position. Like my first essay that I reviewed, one of the winners, Kevin Veloso, he was a non-traditional student who has spent some time in the workforce. And he's kind of rare amongst the essayists because most of them actually had no work experience beyond like part-time food service. Most of them haven't even been admitted into like a retail job yet. I mean, maybe a few of them worked at Walmart, but most of them didn't have any real work experience. So they're writing from the perspective of total newbies. So what does Avery Wehr say in her essay, The Measure of an Education? Well, she talks about a comparison between the median income for a welder, which according to her is like $37,000, versus that of what PayScale.com collected from alleged self-identified philosophy graduates amongst all occupations, okay? But right away, she's talking about this whole grab bag of occupations that aren't really broken out percentage-wise as to their composition just by their training versus the training of a welder, which I'm going to refer to the training of a welder as a proxy for the occupation, because really, to make a direct comparison, you have to be comparing the education versus the education. Otherwise, you'd have to compare all these different occupations against that of a welder. They have a valid comparison. Because, I mean, if you look for job vacancies for a philosopher, you aren't really going to find any, except maybe for something like a visionary in a company where, hey, think of a new product, be our brand guru, stuff like that where it's like brand development. I suppose that can be kind of a philosopher role. But for the most part, you aren't going to have any real philosophy-heavy positions where people get hired or they contend for jobs or anything like that. I mean, philosophy professor really is more often than not just passing on the different schools of thought that have come before you. It's less of your own philosophizing, and it's more like an overview, a history of philosophy, if you would, and just practicing using that on whatever topics the students choose. It's a lot more student-directed, apparently, but unfortunately, that doesn't really gel with the work world, where critical thinking skills are less valued, okay, than what these liberal arts educators are trying to profess. And really, from my experience, as well as from many others that ended up temping with me at the staffing agency, it turns out they just want warm, obedient bodies who will be punctual. And, you know, if they feel that you're bound for better things, then they'll let you know. The hell with what you think. You know, the hell with your critical thinking skills. That's the message that I've been receiving consistently throughout my contention for employment. And, you know, it's been like a whopping 6 years since I graduated my master's degree in public administration. And that was from UW-Milwaukee. I mean, you can say, yeah, it's not the greatest school. And, it's, you know, part of that is what I get for not changing schools for graduate school. But, again, I just wanted to hold on to my student jobs because there was nothing else for me. I was just clinging on to the student jobs. So, you know, if everywhere has someone offering your job, then that's great, but it doesn't really sound like it because she doesn't talk about that. She doesn't talk about what type of job she'll actually have because she has no bloody clue. Yeah, she admits that she has no clue as to what type of job she'll actually work, let alone receive any job interviews. And she doesn't mention working any type of student job. I mean, I worked two student jobs in college, and, you know, this Avery not to use demeaning language, but she has come across as a total noob. This Avery newbie just really comes across as not actually having done substantial work in the working community. So it's really unfortunate, you know, that the UW-Sagwell elevated her as this paragon to emulate when really she's not a role model, not in terms of becoming a productive member of the workforce. No way. But then again, we know that's why UW-Sagwell discontinued this liberal arts essay competition, just because, you know, the people who it valued are way different than the people who hiring managers tend to value. So, okay, why is the comparison between all philosophy graduates and all welders an invalid comparison? Well, time to get into some technical notes about data collection and compatibility. Okay, so neither payscale.com nor the Bureau of Labor Statistics account for those who couldn't even get hired in the first place. And they report, the BOS reports unemployment rate within the occupation. Now, payscale.com does not report unemployment within an occupation. You know why not? Because if the person is unemployed, they aren't going to be entering their salary information. I mean, maybe they were unemployed for a while, but as soon as they got the job, then they just input their salary information, because payscale.com does not accept salary information from jobless people. It's only people who are holding down a job, and that's why Bureau of Labor Statistics is better, in that it collects a broader range. In other words, the payscale.com data is elevated beyond reality. It's inflated because it does not count all those people who are low earners, who are earning too low to even be in the field of their study. Payscale.com data for like philosophy graduates, therefore, does not take into account like a typical waiter who might have a philosophy degree, because, again, there's a lot of self-selection, whereas Bureau of Labor Statistics, they have a better random sampling method where they actually randomly dial people on the not just the landlines, but also the cellular telephones. And they talk to people, and because it's the Authority of Bureau of Labor Statistics and they're approaching you, I mean, the attrition rate is pretty low. Attrition rate is probably, they don't really disclose that, but I'd have to say that for a government agency, a lot of people have a tendency to, like, just obey out of respect. So even if they don't want to give totally honest answers, that fundamental systematic error is randomly distributed. So you have some people over-reporting their income because their braggarts are just one of those things. And you might have other people who are under-reporting their income. These under-reporters of how well they're doing might be concerned that maybe the Bureau of Labor Stats will share their information with the IRS, even though it's really not the case. The data is anonymized. Or the people who are under-reporting their data might wish to portray a gloomier economic picture. But whatever the case, when you sum all those together, the error should be randomly distributed. Whereas with a self-selection method used by PayScale.com, that systematic error is present throughout the entire data set. It's not randomly distributed. It's present in all the inputs, and people tend to exaggerate their income if they're self-selected because they're like, hey, look at me. I have this job, and I earn this much. Ha, ha, ha. So it's one of those things. Again, a psychological factor in the respondent. But again, that's why Bureau of Labor Statistics report is a better indicator than the PayScale.com wage and salary survey. Establish what types of indicators can we rely upon to make a comparison? Well, we have a few years ago from Kiplinger's, it's reported by Yahoo.com, that are just unemployment rates for different liberal arts graduates. And that has the added bonus, very helpful, of providing not only the median salary amongst all those who majored in that, but also the median salary for those who are just out of school for recent grads only. So we can block it off into different compartments and see how little the median actually changes as you gain experience in the field. And it's kind of shocking in some situations. And I'll have a data table later on the website to show all this instead of rattling off live on the podcast. Essentially, this was further confirmed by a finding, UC Santa Barbara. They had an article by the Nexus Review, and it really confirmed a lot of the findings of Kiplinger's reports. And between the two, you can see that the unemployment rate for liberal arts grads is consistently higher by a few percentage points than the average unemployment rate for all those in that age range. And, of course, there's some conflation, too. It's like, well, aren't the unemployment rates for all those of a certain major, all those graduates, aren't those just across the entire working age too? Well, you know, that's where we have to get in there and control by the two tiers. So for recent grads, the unemployment rate, of course, usually takes a few percentage points higher. But unfortunately, that doesn't really show the entire picture because an undisclosed quantity just shelters in academia, and they're going to grad school, and it's just one of those things where there's a delay. There's a delayed unemployment rate, too, that's going to come down later on. Not quite as a tidal wave, but by a few percentage points. It'll be something noticeable. But and that's just because those people in graduate school, they contribute to some extent to a rise in the unemployment rate that will happen in a few years once they get out. And it's like, oh, shucks, I'm still jobless. What the heck? Why don't people recognize the value of my higher education? I want a scholarship based on this. Darn it. Come on, value me. That's the situation. So where are we here? Okay, so we're talking about the data. Oh, here's a good point. Okay, so We had just talked about the whole issue of how you can't really compare the philosophy majors except by their occupations. And if you're not mentioning which occupations are actually ending up in, then you can't really compare them to welders or to construction contractors or anything like that. You have to compare an occupation by occupation because guess what? Maybe some philosophy majors ended up as welders after they went back and earned an associate's degree. That's what happened to one of these other liberal arts grads. I'll get to her later, but essentially from that Nexus Review article, there were a few who scoffed at the notion that job statistics matters, and they ended up in a pretty poor place. But I'll get to those later, so stay on the line. By the way, if you want to chime in, the number at WPR Rebuttal is 929-477-3965. Just checking the dashboard. Okay, so we have 15 minutes remaining, and I will get through this in orderly fashion. So the higher potential salaries of PayScale.com reports are actually more representative of the Ivy League graduates than they are of UW system graduates. And how do we know this? Well, in the seven-step logical process. One, Ivy League graduates have first dibs on the best paying amongst entry-level professional jobs. Two, such closely guarded jobs are therefore less likely because of the opportunity cost. You can't have multiple people holding the same job. They're less likely to be awarded to a public university graduate, such as an alumnus from the UW system. Three, this distinction amongst alma maters makes a liberal arts education more valuable economically for those who attend elite schools than it is for the average student who graduates from the UW system. Four, the upper quintile of earners among philosophy majors and other liberal arts graduates is therefore dominated by Ivy League graduates. Five, as a corollary, the earnings of Ivy Leaguers skew the running average of liberal arts graduate salaries above the median for UW system liberal arts graduate salaries by an unknown amount. We need studies on occupational outcomes, which I've been advocating for at least a few years now. Six, conversely, earnings reports typically omit graduates without any earnings. This means the wage and salary surveys are deprived of a true realistic earnings average, especially for liberal arts graduates, many of whom have joined the boomerang generation by being forced economically to return home and live with relatives, unfortunately. So seven, in conclusion, the running average of liberal arts graduate salaries is overstated. Now, it should be noted that welders are more homogenous in training and education than are liberal arts graduates, or even philosophy majors for that matter. It is therefore an apples to oranges fallacy to compare an educational category of liberal arts grads against an occupational category of welders, even though you might say, well, those who are welders had a welder's education, but as I mentioned, you might have former liberal arts graduates, or I guess they're still grads who still have their degree if they haven't renounced it or anything like that, but some of them might have retrained. So you always have to control for that, where they ultimately end up, right? So, or at least in the case of recent grads, where are they in 5 years? Are they still stuck at home because, no one hired them for anything except for unskilled labor? Now, that's a big problem, if it's more than like 10% of the grads. But so a better comparison of your liberal arts education versus vocational technical education, broad category versus broad category. Then you can go and whittle it down. But you need to just start in the broad strokes that the general public can process the information. Because unfortunately, my audience for this podcast leans more towards the intellectual side, and the content is therefore lost on, I guess, the typical person who's just browsing a podcast for entertainment. I mean, that's a shame, but whatever. I do my best to put these in terms that the layperson can understand. But, well, speaking of which, all this seems to be lost in Avery Ware's because she is too inexperienced about the complexities of the labor market to have any realistic baseline against which to apply her putative critical thinking skills. So moving on to her next part of her essay, she says, "What I'm worried about is that the value of my education is being weighed against the money it will make me later. Education is an investment. That's true. But the returns can't and shouldn't be counted in dollars. Yet this is precisely what's happening. At universities and colleges across the country, education is more and more being viewed as a formula. The student puts in money in exchange for marketable job skills with a comfortable salary." Oh my, Avery, you are wrong. You cannot buy a job. Unless maybe you're a politician, but most of us cannot buy a job. So why'd you put that in your essay? Well, as I said earlier, inexperience. Yeah, the UW system picked these people because it's pretty evident that the people who wrote these essays don't really quite understand how the world tends to operate. I mean, they grasp some issues of unfairness, but they don't know how unfair the labor market is to them, and they're totally oblivious to it. But I'm here to inform them so that they can arm themselves with this information in advance and take proactive measures so they can confront their guidance counselors. They can lobby their internship coordinators and be like, "Hey, why aren't you giving us more jobs here? More jobs that are relevant to our education." And yeah, now is not the time for complacency. But Avery said she was worried about the perception of higher education. Well, she should be worried about how hers is perceived, you know, but for the opposite reason, as what she said, for the reason that I say that her degree won't amount to anything, not when seen next to her name on a resume. All too often, such allegedly formulaic transaction of degree earned, then career entered, does not play out. That's why we have so many disgruntled grads harping on the greater value of trade school vis-a-vis the relative gamble one takes when investing their finite youth into a bachelor's degree, further education, depending on how desperate and or foolhardy they are. So Avery goes on to say, incorporating more vocational training into the college experience is a great idea, don't get me wrong. Well, if the goal of a university is to equip students with the specific skills that jobs demand, we might as well scrap the liberal arts. Oh, hurrah, hurrah, Avery Ware, stop there, because we're in agreement on that point. Of course, you know, that happy ending would be too good to be true, and fortunately, her essay intends to support the illusion that a liberal arts degree is anything more than a placebo piece of paper. So continuing on, she writes, "The idea of teaching to the market is so pervasive in higher education that it's found in the very hearts of the humanities themselves. This fall, sitting in a history class of primarily non-liberal arts majors, I listened to my professor say, 'Now, I know you probably won't use any history after his class, but these essay writing skills we're learning, those you can put on a resume, ha ha ha.' My heart broke a little to hear that. This is a person who thinks history is important, important enough to dedicate her life to studying it. Telling students that they're going to take away from a history course is not a deeper understanding of the world and their place in it. What they're going to get are job skills." Ooh, the horror. Why, Avery, your heart would break even more if you were to end up toiling at unskilled manual labor alongside those who never even went to college. Oh, don't believe this? Here's why you should believe it. I've met at least a dozen other liberal arts college grads who resorted to temping, the same kind of no skill, no future type of work as me. So it does happen to grads, and it can therefore befall even the most acclaimed honors grad. And once the government starts requiring universities to disclose gainful employment data for every degree program, and not merely for non-degree certificate programs, the extent of this underemployment epidemic should be made overwhelmingly clear. So moving on, Ware finishes self-important airs by relaying how she enjoyed a difficult, complicated, and at times uncomfortable conversation about where certain symbols of identity, such as Confederate flag stickers, should be allowed on campus. Because Avery admits she and her classmates wasted time on such issues by agreeing to disagree. In our words, "Well, we didn't fix racism in one class period." Well, no duh, Avery. It's a waste of time to try to fix people's perceptions. Try fixing hiring managers' perceptions. You know, it's really tough. Okay, you'll find out. Trust me on this. So such difficult discourses are better applied towards this question. who is going to hire someone who not only claims to care less about their job prospects and paying intellectual stimulation, concern that broke Avery's heart, in her own words, but also demonstrates a dearth of critical thinking skills, which is antithetical to the liberal arts grad. Let us remember that I exposed Avery's aversion to critical thinking during my deconstruction of her misleading non-comparison of earnings between a subset of only those working philosophy grads and all, including unemployed, welders. Now, a valid comparison would account for unemployed philosophy grads because their earnings are more feast and famine, more hit and miss, more employed with plenty or jobless with nothing than are those in the skilled trades. Now, those in the skilled trades might earn a few thousand less per job, but they're more likely to have a job that even pays above $32,000 annually. So, how does Avery wrap up her essay? Well, I've heard this is described another way a vocational education can teach you how to find answers, but a liberal arts education can teach you how to ask questions. Well, I say, if you don't know how to find the answers and are going to answer your questions, i.e. admissions counselors, when confronted with data about mediocre post-degree employment outcomes, then knowing the right questions to ask is worth. Because you can't get anywhere. You can ask the right questions all day, but you better know how to find the answers on your own because, man, you know, I mean, people aren't going to want to help you, especially if hiring managers are just giving you the cold shoulder. And being a sophistically wise, if not sophisticatedly, philosopher doesn't win you any job offers. It doesn't put any bread on the table. It doesn't do you a damn bit of good, except potentially as an introspective right, just like what I'm doing right now to tear down your arguments. Dear Avery, she has an end cap on her essay. It goes like this. Most of my fellow students aren't going to be historians or professors of English. They will be recreational therapists and x-ray technicians and nurses and engineers and marketing consultants and entrepreneurs. But, of course, their education should give them specific skills they need to succeed in those fields. Okay, so right away, Avery contradicts herself in saying that, okay, so her education in liberal arts is supposed to be valuable, but her peers who are majoring in hands-on applied specialties, such as in the allied health profession, in engineering, and in business operations, well, she admits that they'll more readily have specific skills they need to succeed, but what she doesn't admit is that a lot of people actually go and earn their associates after their bachelor's because they find out their liberal arts degree means jack squid. It should be known that all those fields, as mentioned by Avery, are more quickly prepared for by pursuing an associate's from a vocational technical school. METC students are often on better footing, credibility-wise, than UW students during the internship hunt because hiring managers know those MATC students understand precisely how little education they need in order to get the job, thereby making those MATC students appear more efficient and desirable. Okay, so Avery just goes on and on and on. She says so much, but so little. But I just have to put in this one last line so I can ultimately tear it apart, and that is, but beyond their very careers, they'll be friends, parents, and teachers. They'll be citizens of the world. Well, doesn't that reek of globalism, huh? Don't jump to conclusions about what they'll be, Avery, because you might not be employed. I know you didn't say that they'll, you said varied careers, but, you know, that can include vast underemployment, too. So, I mean, that's another micro-concession from Avery Weirs about it, but okay, so Avery, just being realistic, you'll never see most of your friends ever again, not your college friends, once you and they have graduated college. And the way the world's going, it is doubtful you'll want to become a parent, unless psychotically deluded, or careless and drunk. But I've managed to avoid becoming a parent because I'm pretty sober about the situation that we're at in this world, and really, it's just, why push it onto a kid? Better not to have any. That's my opinion. But okay, so as far as Avery's slimy citizens of the world remark, and it is slimy when you consider how insidious it is, we don't need to accept anything global as market to us. Globalism sucks for you as a job seeker, for small business owners in your hometown because they're put out of business by multinational firms, and stinks for anyone who doesn't learn freelance the rest of their working lives. Oh, you don't believe that? Well, Google globalism and freelance in the same search, and you'll find articles that talk about it. Yeah, globalism destroys job security. It's true, and it just stinks. So the hell with globalism. And, you know, I'm running out of time here, so on the website I'll have a close-up as to what happened to some of the other liberal arts grads from a few years back who said, oh, I don't care what the numbers say, I'm going to succeed. Well, they did not. So just be forewarned, you know, it looks pretty dim for liberal arts grads. So don't bother, and I'll be here again on WPR Rebuttal next Friday, August 12th, and I'm going to aim for like 1 o'clock start time. If I haven't started by then, just be patient. I have a real life too, so I'll definitely start by 1:30 at the latest. Okay, see you everyone. Bye.